Hey, what's up? It's your boy Cameron from the White People Won't Save You podcast. We have some live shows coming at you, and we wanted to give you the dates real quick so we can see you guys at the shows. First up, we got April 14th at the Brooklyn Comedy Collective in Brooklyn, New York. We have a guest coming through. We got Dylan Green, also known as Cinema Sai on social media. He is an author, host of the Real Notes podcast, and a contributing writer at pitchfork.com. You definitely want to see him there. We got April 26th at The Crown in Baltimore. And we also have May 25th at Caveat in New York City. We got guests and tickets and details coming for those two shows. But come see us. We would love to see you there. Come join us for the Caucasity. And here goes the episode.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The White People Won't Save You. This is the podcast where we deconstruct these white savior films and recontextualize them through a Black and POC lens. I'm one of your hosts, Jordan Clark.
And I'm the other one, Cameron Mason.
And we've got a lot to discuss. we have discovered a movie recently. You know, here's the secret of how I discovered these movies. Because
tell me. Because you text me every now and then with the text. I found 30 more. I found 15 more.
I will.
And so then I sigh.
Originally, there was like the master list, which was just like, you know, when you Google white savior film and like, you know, all the lists that people put together, you know, I basically cribbed everything off of that. And then from there, things would just kind of like, this is the story of the show is like, I don't know if this happens to you as well, Cam, but it feels like things just find you, you know, like you're not even really looking for it. And then you turn around on IMDb or someplace and you're like, wait, what? So that was happening for a little bit. And then I started going to IMDb and Amazon and just searching, typing the movies we've done and searching like the similar.
You would like this too? Are you a racist?
And then I just recently, though, I just said, okay, well, let me just go to one of these sites that are just like, here's a list of similar films, right? And there is one that is... I did very well there, but also it's interesting because they have a lot of various search texts that are like racial movie or like black and white film or like, you know what I mean? Like all these like different categories that I was like, okay, let's see what this turns up. And there were some things, and one of those things was a movie called Enemy Territory. And to break this movie down, we had to reunite the original All-Star team, our very first guest on the show. We had to reform Voltron. We're welcoming back the one and only Sean Pryor.
Yo, Jordan, Cameron, thank you for having me back. I appreciate this a lot. I feel that I'm partially to blame for this because before you discovered Enemy Territory, see, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, we have like an Instagram message thread together. Like that message thread is called We Wildin'. And one day I decided to share with them a trailer from the now defunct Canon Films. The movie was called Crack House. And I showed them that trailer because I was like, you will not believe this when you see it. And the messages I received back, I feel was a catalyst for Jordan finding Enemy Territory. So to all of our listeners that are listening today, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, look at the trailer for Crack House, because it is, I think these movies are, I'm going to run a theory by you guys, because I've started to think about this more, just not only in terms of the show, but like as we continue to form a white savior theology and like, you know, thesis statement of like what all this means. I feel like there is a subgenre or a spinoff genre of white savior film in which white people save everyone else from us. right? So like Death Wish, right? Like these like vigilante movies where it's like they are saving, I guess, whiteness or like white, just general society. Yeah. You know, because like
whiteness.
Yeah.
I'm like, sure white people will call society whiteness.
but in the way that it usually works is like it's because society has failed them specifically, right? Like an injustice was done to them that the police can't solve and the criminal justice system can't solve. And they individually, one lone white gunman, can right the wrongs of, you know, what's been, and it usually involves just shooting a lot of black and brown people. But they are the heroes, and it's not on like some Taxi Driver stuff where you're just like, man, this guy is fucked up. Like, this is, it's like, go, yeah, get him. Like, who's next, Charles Bronson? Like, gun him down. And it's just like, wow, you know, this isn't quite that, because there's some very interesting decisions they made in this movie.
There's politics. There's light politics going on here.
But it is that, in the sense of like you are supposed to, every black person that gets blown away by an AK-47, you're supposed to be like, yes, another one. Give me more of that.
Oh Lord, no. Everything about
really got him that time.
It's wild. I'm gonna give the listeners just like a very brief rundown of the film. I'm not gonna reveal who's in the movie because that's part of the fun.
Oh yeah.
Of enemy territory. So we'll get to that in the 5 minutes. But this movie is a movie that came out in 1987. Mm-hmm. It is from Empire Pictures, which isn't Canon Films, but kinda is. It's like the play cousin of Canon Films. It's like they were on the same bullshit.
Play cousin, I like that.
And they had made some, I mean, they were both kind of these B-movie companies. And so this movie is directed by Peter Manoogian, who had really only done more B-movies before this, and subsequently after has directed a lot of like B-horror films. It's written by novelist Stuart M. Kaminsky, who, if you didn't know, did dialogue write-ups on Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America.
What?
So,
what?
And there's a fun tie-in with that, so we'll put a pin in that for later.
Oh, jeez.
But I'm just gonna jump right into the 5 minutes, because
yeah,
this movie needs to be heard to be believed. It is available on YouTube in several different iterations. It's all the same movie, but at least five.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you about why that is in a minute too. But the movie starts with Barry, who is played by Gary Frank, who I feel like I know his face, but he is, I think, just a TV actor. He was on a show called Family.
Yes.
For a long time.
Yes.
So he's just the living embodiment of down bad, right? Like, we just meet him and he's arguing with his wife about not even custody, but just when he gets to see the kids, he pulls out the Johnny Walker to pour it into his coffee. Like, it's not looking good for your boy. No. Until he gets called into the boss's office. He is a life insurance policy salesman, and he's basically given an ultimatum by his boss. There's a woman, elderly woman, who took out a $100,000 policy. And if he can go and collect this policy and bring it back basically immediately, he'll get a $6,000 commission. Wait a minute, a $4,000 commission, because his boss is going to skim a little bit off the top. But like, if he can get this done tonight, you know, it's not implied that his job is saved, but it is kind of like, all right, you know, you're in the good graces, right? So off he goes. Cut to, wait for it, Will, or Ray Parker Jr. of Ghostbusters fame, playing a telephone repairman who's driving around. His shift is over. He's getting ready to get off the clock. His friend's like, yo, work's done, let's go home. And he's like, hold on a minute, I got one more stop to make. And it doesn't involve you. I got a girl up in the projects because you know Ray Parker likes the girls, and he's gonna go hang out after work. He doesn't have to return the truck until morning, so he's gonna go do his due at the very same apartment complex that our man Barry is going to. Barry shows up off top. Kids accost him, tell him to come off $2 so they don't like fuck up his car. Then immediately turn around and say, "Let's fuck up this man's car," right? So, like, but that's how you know that we're in dangerous territory, right? You look around, and really, I mean, it's pretty evident that mostly everybody in this area is gang banging, gang banging. he pulls up. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why they don't have any of this information for him, but he pulls up and he's like, "I'm looking for this woman. Where does she live? Nobody's told me anything about her." He's trying to find her, Miss Elva, and he taps a boy on the shoulder who's talking to this girl. He turns around and says, "Motherfucker, you cracker motherfucker, if you touch me again," pulls out a switchblade, threatens to stab him until an elderly security guard comes out, basically shoos him away with a gun and is like, "Hey, white man, like, you should come with me because it's not safe for you to be around here." He takes him up to Ms. Elva's apartment. He's literally, this security guard is literally there just to tell him how awful it is to live here, the names of all the gangs in the apartment complex, mm-hmm. that he's basically going to die if he doesn't get out of here in the next hour or so. And to just make some more like just general wisecracks, but he finally gets to Ms. Elva's apartment. Elva is played by Frances Foster, who Cameron has said is what was she from Kirkland?
She's Aunt Song. She is the aunt to the main character that they go visit down in Maryland in the freaky compressed part of that movie.
And she got the gospel blasting, you know what I mean? She's fully in her element. He comes in, she's like, "Why are you here? It's late at night." And he's like, "Look, I just got to get this taken care of. Let's sign this paperwork." And then for some reason, he just starts inquiring about her life. What's a nice lady like you doing in a place like this? And she's like, "Well, you know, my daughter also lives in the building, and like, there's not a lot of places for old black woman with no man to live, and this is basically what I can afford." And he's like, "Well, let's just sign this contract so I can get out of here." And she's like, "Do you take cash?" Goes to her fridge, pulls out $100,000 in bankrolls, and just and rolled up money, hands it to him, and he's like, I guess I got this cash on me now." He heads out, and the security guard is like, "You know, come on, white man, like, you can't be here much longer." They get to the door. Get to the elevator. Guess who's waiting for them in the elevator? The vampire gang, which is the black gang of this neighborhood, led by, drumroll, one Tony Todd, doing the Tony Toddiest. Like, he is living. He is living in this role.
He is. He did a great job, honestly.
Yeah, he did.
His character is called The Count. And he basically calls Barry a ghost, and
oh, implies that
because he touched his young blood, now he has to die, right? They do like a vampire like salute thing in the
wait. There's a dude, and that's a pause the 5 minutes because it's already over. There's a scene when you meet them. There's a scene where the camera pans up off a dude who is like laying like he's in a coffin, but there's candles around him. He is fully alive, by the way. He's fine. And I don't know why they're doing this. They don't say. They just got a nigga like Dracula'd out on the roof of this project.
Well, but now it's on, right? Like, they're,
yes, now it's on. Now it's for real.
He's basically like, the offer is, you know, come with us and we'll basically cut you up. Maybe you live, I don't know. Or like, we're gonna chase you down, right? So security guard looks at the situation and he's like,
"Definitely concerns me a little bit, you know what I mean? But you know, I packed that thing too. So he come around this way, you will get caught."
And he lets off a shot kills the kid, right, that we saw, that we met at the beginning of the movie. But then he also gets stabbed, so he dies. I don't know why. I guess because Barry technically could grab the gun, the vampires, like, scatter away. And, you know, Barry is calling for help. Who's going to help him? How about the man that we met 20 minutes ago and has not shown up since, Ray Parker Jr.? I guess he was done doing what he was doing and busts out of this girl's apartment, runs over.
With no shoes on.
Yep.
No plan. Just heard a man call.
No plan either.
And he's like, all right, let me try to help you. Security guard's dead. He's already dead. And now, you know, Barry's got to get out of there. So Will is like, yo, let's just go back to Margot's place. She's like, you know, the dick wasn't that good, and I think I don't want any of those problems, so you can just leave, and I'll keep your shoes, I guess. And so they run back to Alva's apartment. She's like, I mean, I really also don't want you in here, but, like, you know, I need – her thing is, like, I kind of need that life insurance policy to pop off. So, like, I'm a guy, if I can help get you out of the building, like, that would be to my benefit as well. And I guess under the false presumption that because she is an elderly woman, they won't do anything to her. So this unlocks maybe, like, one of the – most random moments of the movie where suddenly Will is just telling everybody he's a Vietnam veteran. He's got all of these skills and things that, like, had nothing to do with anything. All of a sudden he's got a plan. First plan, we're going to bust out the window and go down to the next level. Barry is like, me? White man? No thanks. But Will is like, or because the count came to the door, it was like, Psycho, who, even before anything, I'm going to give Psycho... Because, boy, what a role to inhabit.
Yes.
And he did something. I don't know what it was. But Psycho's out by the door, so they don't have a choice. They got to bust out the window. In the first of what is a running gag, and each time gets more and more egregious, he bursts into a room where there's two young black girls just sitting on the bed. Immediately they're like, are you gonna rape us, white man? And then Will,
that's crazy,
also comes in and he's like, give these girls, I don't know, $100.
$2? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I thought it was $2, but he probably gave him like $100 or $50.
The rolls are only like $50. There ain't no small bills in that. It's $100,000.
Yeah. So you're right.
He gave her maybe like $50, $100. So I think she got two bills and she was like, fuck, mom, we're going to go to get some candy. So that's the hilarious. Next stop is Elva's daughter, who they run down to the apartment.
I thought it was the granddaughter.
Yes, the granddaughter. They run down. Intercut with this is maybe one of my favorite parts of the movie, where we cut to a funeral.
Yep. Go ahead.
We cut to a funeral for the young gang member who was murdered. He is in what I think is the courtyard, flames everywhere, lying, arms crossed.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Okay. I had the timeline screwed up.
It looked like he was laying on milk crates.
It looked like he was on the ground.
just his, like, body just dead, just laid there. And Tony Todd giving, like, just a Hamlet type speech about how we are the vampires, we are the night. Nobody comes to our castle and fucks with us. I'm basically Dracula, I guess. Like, everybody spread out.
I got it in my notes. I had to write down this dialogue. It was too good. Hold on.
I mean, I can't tell if the dialogue was good or it was just Tony Todd.
I think it's Tony Todd, actually, because what I'm about to read you is terrible. Two quotes from this speech. Nobody wipes an ass dirty finger on the walls of our castle. Oh, and who else? Who's going to pay? The ghost and the black traitor must pay.
Now, do you have a Tony Todd voice, Cameron? Can you do...
Oh, yeah, hold on. Let me see. Nobody wipes that ass dirty finger on the walls of our house. There's a little stank to it.
Yeah.
Because the reason he's so good in this movie is because He is going 200% on every line.
Oh yeah.
Nobody wipes it. He is snarling when he, by the way, he's like dangling off the chimney of the projects, talking to these people. Nobody wipes an ass dirty fatal on the walls of our castle. And I'm like, what? It's dirty. What is that even?
The energy.
And he did. He did the notion of like a finger, like, yeah, swipe it on a castle. How dare he? And the ghost and the black spider must pay. Like,
let us not forget. Let us not forget. He finished all that with saying, show me your fangs.
Show me your fangs. Kind of just... And they did the.
This gang has a lot of hand gestures and like salute movements
and not to mention that
a lot of just audible hissing.
Yeah, you gotta do it. You're not in the gang unless you do the stupid hand motion and the hiss.
Because
that's how you know people are afraid of you.
Right. So they go down to our heroes are going down to Elva's granddaughter, who turns out to be none other than Stacey Dash, aka Look at the it's like she's in the kitchen hanging out. They show up and she's like, I guess grandmama said I gotta help you. And you know, her grandfather is like, the fuck you do, like, get these people out of my house. Like, this, I don't want anything to do with this. And she's like, well, there is one place that we could take them. And granddad is like, I mean, if you want to die, like, you could certainly try it. And it turns out that there is one man in the whole building that everyone is afraid of. And that is, I think, is it Parker? Is that his name?
Mr. Parker.
Parker, yeah.
Mr. Parker, who lives a couple floors down. Basically, the movie is they're just moving down the building, you know, every 25 minutes. And so they have to go to Parker's house. They manage to get down there, but along the way, Barry gets caught up by one of the vampires who's coming for them, you know, Will and him get into an altercation, and Barry stabs this man in the back, and then in what seems like about 10 minutes of screen time, breaks down and cries while Ray Parker Jr. asks him to tell me your name over and over again. It never ends until Barry is just like, I guess I'm over killing this man. Finally, they get down to Parker's. Parker has like a bunker. He's turned his apartment into a bunker. They get over out of like a little like slit in the door. He like sticks an AK out and is like, nobody's coming in here. Y'all can get killed. Like, I don't have anything to do with this shit. Again, Ray Parker Jr. is offering Barry's money at every turn and is like, well, about you up at the other place that they just came from, Stacey Dash's apartment, he's like, hey, give this man $100 for my shoes. And then down here, he's like, hey, what about if we give you $500? And Parker's like, I'll think about it. Like, y'all can come in, like, put your weapons down. Parker, turns out, one, is being played by Jan Michael Vincent. Two, is I think he's also a Vietnam War veteran.
Yes, he is.
He's definitely a Vietnam vet, yeah.
This is in and of the era where, like, the Vietnam War vet, it's not like, because what you'll assume is just parallels now to, like, MAGA, and he probably would be MAGA, but they're playing it as, like, he's just lost his fucking mind. You know what I mean? Like, the lizard people are coming for him, and he's built his secret bunker hideout to, like, not get touched by any of this, and all the racial slurs you can imagine come out of his mouth.
He's calling people Mau Mau's. I was like, what? What are you even on, bro? Yeah.
Yep.
Call Ray Parker Jr. boy.
Yeah. And Ray Parker Jr. is like, hey, man, I was in Nam too. What you talking about? And,
right,
but there are moments I know we'll get to this, but I just have to say this real quick, because Jan Michael Vincent, you know, this is the beginning of the down bad era, okay? And for him, but like, he's totally into this character. He's like, don't you see, I got a bird, and you know what that bird does? if it smells gas, then I know I gotta go get my gas mask. I got a cat. It shot the cat, and the cat runs away. I hate cats, but you know what? I need cats to taste my food because it could be poisoned. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
The intro monologue to his character is just like all the worst tropes and like racist bait stuff is like, it's just, it all comes at you at once. It's almost like jarring just to meet his character in the movie, even though you've just seen vampires like try to kill people.
He's their guardian angel though. So, you know, he like, is. He's their last hope. Stacy Dash is like, I gotta go check on grandma. So y'all hang out here. I'll be back. She goes up like a dumbass because of course the count's just hanging out there. yokes her up. Is like, I'm gonna fuck your grandma up and then I'm gonna fuck you up unless you tell me where these people are at. And, you know, she's like, well, good luck because they're with Parker now. So if you want to go die, like, you can go see that crazy man. They all go downstairs. There's a standoff between Parker and the Count. He's basically like, Barry, more or less, is like, all right, you know, I'm going to give it up. Like, you let the women go, let Elva go and her granddaughter go, and like, we'll come out. But of course, that's not going to happen because as soon as they get out there, there's a shootout. Like, Parker has every gun imaginable. His wheelchair has weapons in it that he fires that are like darts or like other things, and he wipes out like a quarter of the vampires in this hallway shootout. But he unfortunately gets shot. Elva gets locked into his apartment with him, and our heroes are on the run once again. They leave, they go downstairs to a prostitute's apartment, I guess that's the only way to describe it. She's like, yo, white boy, come over here, you know, like, I got something for you. And he's like, oh no, I didn't mean it like that, I'm okay. And Will once again is like, give the lady some money.
Love that.
She's like, yo, you know, I'll consider this a retainer for the next time you come around. After that, the only thing they have left is at the very beginning of a movie, randomly two black children are walking and one of them is talking about, I know the only way out that the vampires don't know. Well, you heard that initially, it was nonsense because what does any of that mean? But now,
I was like, what is he? What is this? And I was like, what the hell is going on here? I'm like, why is Bud from the Cosby Show telling me that he knows a way to something?
And by the way, when they cut to that scene, it's a random cut to that scene. You have not met those characters before.
No, it's just this is just happening. But now it's coming full circle because Stacy Dash is like, I guess the only way for us to get out is to trust this child is not making up stories and can get us out. So they go knock on his door. They trick his mother into letting them inside because she thinks that they're the fine telephone operator. Because she takes one look at Ray Parker Jr. and she's like, I mean, you can come in.
and let us not forget. Let us not forget the phone lines are down completely in the building, supposedly.
Yeah, because nobody will come and fix them. Also, including Ray Parker Jr. because he's just there to get some. They come in and, you know, basically Barry is like, "Yo, we need your child. Your child's the only way for us to get out of here. How much for your child?" And the mom is like, I don't know where you're from, but they stopped selling black boys a long time ago. He's like,
love that line. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, Barry was like, yo, that's my bad. I didn't mean it that way.
I was just
like,
a white man. Here's some more money.
She was like, $400 don't buy a black boy.
And I was like, turn into Toni Morrison real quick.
But that doesn't deter them from trying to figure out a way to get out. And Chet, who's the boy's name, is like, yo, I'm gonna take it upon myself to be the hero here. He puts something in his bed, looked like either a thing from Fantastic Four action figure or something, which I don't know how that tricked his mom, but he makes up his bed as if he's still there. He sneaks out. Another vampire, well, no, our favorite Psycho comes back to attack them. He gets thrown down an elevator shaft And then they, Chet and our heroes are able to kind of climb down the elevator shaft to get them. We cut back to Tony Todd, who is losing his fucking mind. He cannot understand how they have not caught any of these people yet. He is so upset. One of his gang members comes up to him and is trying to talk to him. And he's like cutting his hand. And even at that point, the gang member's like, nigga, I didn't sign up to do this.
He's sitting there cutting his hand, being all angry, like, I just got to find them. And I'm like, why are you cutting yourself? And like the look on that dude's face, like the whole time that like the count is cutting his own hand, that brother was just like, yeah, we're going to go find him. All right, bye.
Yeah, and, can I join another gang? Is it too late?
I was about to say, you're the boss? Oh my God, you don't expect me to do that, right? I like my hands.
Yeah, Psycho ain't showed up in a minute, so he's losing it, and you know the vampires are getting more and more desperate. They have snuck down into the basement where Chet's secret exit to the building is. They step over Psycho's dead body
dead and keep body. Walking
to set. Psych, he ain't dead.
He ain't dead. I loved it.
Psycho gets up. Looking like an extra from Thriller, and walks over and attempts to choke Stacey Dash. Barry, who maybe 20 minutes ago was horrified at the idea of killing somebody, beats Psycho into the nether realm and is like just going to the point that even Ray Parker Jr. is like, you're enjoying that a little too much. Like,
damn, bro.
I know Psycho is a vampire. Yeah, Psycho's a vampire. He's also still black, and I don't know if I'm into seeing you do that.
Right.
I don't know if I'm gonna be next.
he asked him for a ride when it was all done, and Ray Parker Jr. was like, no, man, you can walk, bro. You can walk. A Psycho. Think about that.
But Psycho is beyond dead at this point. Chet leads them to his secret exit, which happens to just be, I think, like a ventilation shaft that takes them outside.
It's just a vent.
Yeah. And Ray Parker's like, I'm a grown man. I can't fit through that. But Stacey Dash is like, I can do it. I might be able to do it. I might be able to get out. And Ray Parker Jr. is like, you're going to get raped. And she's like, hey, I'm around the way. You know what I mean? I know I look like I'm going to be in Clueless in a couple of years and, you know, maybe be showing up on Fox News a couple of years after that. But like, I know my way around the hood. Trust me. Leaves immediately, almost gets raped. Runs away.
Yes, by the El Muerto gang. Muerto. I can never say that properly. But yes,
Muerto.
Muerto. Thank you. The Muerto gang. And like, it's the most stereotypical. The most stereotypical. Latin gang. Bro, it's terrible.
And they're like
and they're all like light jogging, chasing each other. It's just like, I'm like, light jog?
That's what I was going to say. She's like not really trying to get away. And they're also, for some reason, just keeping pace instead of like running.
Yeah, they're not really trying to catch her.
But she does manage to get away. She gets away and, of course, goes to everybody's friend, the police. Who immediately arrest her on site because who's this crazy black woman with a crowbar in the police department? So
hold on. I never thought I'd say this, but to the police's credit, she did run up in the fucking precinct and past the bar. Like she went to the back. No, black person on planet Earth knows that you don't, even if we in trouble and we go into the police precinct, we're not going past the bar. We're not going into the back room. Bro, but that's where you lose your life.
Cameron, she's different. She's not like the others. You know what I mean? There's something about
her. She got pretty privileged. They was like, hold on. You're looking good.
Ray Parker Jr. is back in the basement with Barry, and he's like, all right, look, she probably ain't going to come back. So here's plan B, right? And like whispers into his ear. The count had it. He's pissed. His men failing left and right. Nobody's got him what he needs. He needs the ghost and the blood traitor. And he's going to handle business himself. So one of his goons comes up and is like, yo, we searched the top of the building. We searched every floor of the building. Wait a minute. There's one place we haven't searched yet. maybe they're in the basement. Tony Todd's like, shut your dumb ass up. They'd be in the basement. Oh my and then God. He's like, I mean, I don't know where else they would be. And he's like, all right, whatever. Let's go to the basement. So they're coming down. We look out. Who's standing outside with another hood? Kadeem Hardison.
Yes. Dwayne Wayne.
I love this.
He's just hanging out there, shooting the basically, like, they left us out here. Like, I don't know why we're even still out here. Like, I feel goofy. They always do this shit to us.
This Rosencrantz and Guildenstern-ass scene. Like, what the fuck? You never met these niggas the whole movie, and then we cut into them, like, literally, like, flipping a quarter or something like that, talking about, man, this shit crazy going on today. You know, if I was in charge, it would be, I wouldn't talk about it. I'm like, what the... What is this movie?
Right.
We're like, we're literally inches away from the finale and we're meeting new niggas.
Right. Like, and they're just basically, because Ray Parker Jr. and Gary Frank's characters are in the basement. There's a door right there, but if they try to go out that door, they're going to get shot by Kadeem Hardison, Dwayne Wayne, aka A-Train, and his homie, right? So like, you know, so then you have the whole thing where, like, you know, Ray Parker Jr. tells Chet to go back upstairs and like, Barry's like, he tells Barry, hey, give Chet the money. Give him the money. Okay. Like
all of the money.
All
the roles. You know what I mean? And he goes up. What's the plan? We don't know, but the vampires are coming down in the basement. They step over. Well, they don't step over Psycho's body yet because he's been mangled in the next room. They pass Psycho's dead body, and Ray Parker Jr. has, like, barricaded the gate that they're trying to get through. They run outside. Vampires take some shots. Gary gets shot.
Shot in the leg.
Barry gets shot in the leg. You know, it looks like he's not doing too good, but Chet's gone upstairs and he's just throwing the money out the window.
Love it.
Every single dollar.
Spend this white man's money.
Kadeem Hardison is like, fuck yeah, I'm getting out the projects. He starts running around trying to get money. Psych. He gets shot to death by Ray Parker Jr.
That's probably the biggest twist in the movie, honestly. Because I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. Like, this random dude is like, yeah, I'm going to come up. I'm going to get this. Oh, wait. Wow. Machine gun. Oh, my God.
They're running. Now, the whole time in this movie, there's been a very, like, unrealistic limitation set on the vampires in that it seems like they do crime at night. They keep talking about the night and how they run the night, and people keep saying, you can't be here after dark. Somewhat imply that if you're there during the day, they won't fuck with you. I don't really understand, but it's daylight now. A very small part of me wanted Tony Todd to just go up in flames the second they stepped out into daylight.
This movie ain't got the balls, because that would have been they were actual vampires the whole time. Like, come on.
I was like, movie, you would have had me. If that, I don't know if I would have forgiven everything, but I would have been like,
Well,
you got me.
I would have forgiven a lot.
The thing is, if it would have happened, it would have made sense, because the movie's produced by Charles Band, who is known for Reanimator, Puppet Master, and all those types of films. You know, because, like, this is his distribution company. Empire was his distribution company. Until the early, late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yeah, if Tony Todd and them caught on fire, would have made perfect sense.
we're at the final showdown, right? Barry's been shot. It looks like he might not make it. Vampires, for some reason, instead of just literally shooting them on sight, decide to menace them further onto the playground. And Wade Parker Jr., he's like, I don't really have a lot of bullets left, you know what I mean? Like, this might be it for us. Tony Todd...
There's one bullet left.
Tony Todd starts to make his way very slowly up. You know, he's got his shotgun that he's pumped. He's ready to let it go. And gets shot. And then I think we're supposed to, I think, maybe understand that all of this is happening because he's on PCP. Because he eats that bullet and just keeps walking.
Yes.
Screaming, I am immortal.
That's why I was like, come on. If they really vampires, let them be vampires, bro. Like, you ain't got to explain shit to me. I'm already seeing a grandma with an AK-47. Like, it don't matter no more.
Well, Barry hits him with a swing. And then Ray Parker Jr. and him start going face to face. He gets the shotgun from him. He shoots him again. He kind of does like, it's a 2-minute death scene because he kind of just like stumbles around slowly and then like falls to the ground. And then there's like a close up on his face as the blood leaves his mouth. Rest of the gang is kind of like, shit.
Damn.
I don't know what to do. You know, Count's dead. Like, is that it for us? Nah, maybe we should finish this. They start to rush. And then out the window, looking down, you just hear. As Grandma.
Grandma and West Side Gun and Conway the Machine.
Grandma Elva is in Parker's room. Somehow, I guess she was a nom too because she is letting it go. Scaring off.
What to do with that thing.
Scaring off. She wasn't the rest worried. Of them.
She wasn't.
Yeah.
No, I ain't getting my baby.
Yeah, that gospel was for you, not for her. You know what I mean?
That's and right.
She I'm scares say them a
prayer
off.
For you, bitch.
The police show up. I guess don't decide to shoot everyone on site, and you know Stacey Dash is running to them, and then you think there would be more to the movie. No, it just ends. That's it. Hard cut to the end.
Because Tony and Stacey Dash shows up, and like you got Ray Parker Jr. with Gary Frank, and Gary Frank, who got shot in the leg, he says, I got this really shitty accident insurance. And the stretcher comes, right? And when the stretcher comes, you know, normally the stretcher is low at first, so you can put the person on it, and then you raise the stretcher up. No, not this stretcher. This stretcher is so low to the ground, it might as well be a cot, okay? They put them on that little tiny-ass stretcher that was so low to the ground, you could, like, touch ants without any hesitation and, like, just kind of, like, push them off. The end.
The end. Yeah. Well, I mean...
What? Wow. You know what? Your recount of that was like just as harrowing as the movie. Like, yes. I felt like I relived it.
Yes.
I was.
It's so, I guess this is how we have to qualify, right? Because Barry is an interesting character in so much as he is at once the reluctant savior, but then also like a passive savior. Like, he's almost like a Mr. Magoo type savior where, like, just by his presence being there, things work out. But like,
and that Watt $100,000, you know.
You know, but like, Will is the one doing most of the legwork, the heavy lifting. You know, he's the one shooting people, and all that stuff, and like kills
getting the through the building, killing the villain. Yeah, like he's the hero,
but. Barry is kind of like, you know, he's what sets all of the events in motion, like him going to collect the insurance, him pissing off that teenage vampire, you know, like him calling for help brings Will to him, you know, and like the money that he has helps grease the wheels that get them from place A to B. He kills two people, you know, so I guess he's also got, you know, a body count. And I, you know, again, it's unclear. Elva seems to have the movie made it seem like she liked him, you know, like she trusted him. I also can't tell if it's just like, but I also need that life insurance to come through. So like, I need this white man to live and get out of here, you know, but like, but his presence is kind of what kicks the events into motion. But then also like, I guess because he is passive in so much of the film, and isn't really like act like he didn't want to do any of this shit. He just wanted $4,000,
right? he owes child support, and you know, he owes child support because he's a deadbeat dad. And you know what's also weird about that, when he gets to, you know, gets to the projects, gets to the apartment complex, when he's just like, you know, help me, where do I find blah, blah, blah? I'm like, where do I find Elva, blah, blah, blah? I'm like, shouldn't it be on the fucking paperwork?
That's what I was going to say.
That's like the first thing you would, how'd you know what address to go to?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, the Da Vinci Code. You don't have to figure out like the next step once you get to where you're going to.
But
like,
apparently he did.
Because they make it seem like on the application, Miss Elver wrote her name and said location, the projects, and that was it.
Well, I guess we'll figure it out once we get there. Yeah, like that was strange, and also like he, because as the movie goes on, you know, like he ingratiates himself to people who should not like him at all. But
you mean this entire building full of people?
Yeah, except for I guess Parker maybe, but everybody else like seemingly
that's my guy.
Like, yeah, you know, even the sex worker is like, I'd like to get with that, you know, even though like ain't much to get with, and he seems not necessarily turned off, but more so just like, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Right. Like,
yeah, he's even more afraid. He's like, oh, shit.
But wow. Yeah, like his incompetence is kind of played for laughs. And again, the continuous running joke of him, like, give him some money, you know, give him some money. And him kind of unwillingly, like, peeling off a couple 50s to pass out to people. right. But even until the end, like he's doesn't seem to, he only seems keen on survival. Like he doesn't really care how it happens. He just doesn't want to be here anymore.
Right.
Right.
So with that, I actually kind of thought about this movie in a different way a little bit. But I mean, before we get to the white saviorism of it all, which you, like you said, reluctant. So he's not even like that much of one compared to like the Matt Damons and the you know, other people we've met on this journey. But I saw this movie kind of as like a white businessman in the 80s, like a 30, you know, late 20s to late 40s businessman's worst nightmare.
Yep.
Like, oh, any white businessman, this is his worst nightmare. Like, oh my, imagine this is a whole genre of movies of like white people having to like, or like well-to-do white people in some kind of financial tangle, what like leads them to the hood and the worst parts of the hood and the part of the hood that wants to kill them.
Right. With the vampires.
And the hood is so over-exaggerated that it like, they're like, oh no, it has to be a war zone. I'm like, huh? Like every single floor of that building had graffiti on the inside. Every single floor. Okay, that whole building was tagged up. That whole building was tagged up.
It's interesting because, like Chet, like each individual apartment seemed like a wildly different place.
Like, yes. Oh yeah, I liked that though. I did like that.
Elva's apartment seemed like what I would assume most apartments in that building would look like, which is not necessarily like, you know, she made it look nice, but it's like, there's not a lot of space here. She's just making do. Even like the, I don't know if, I keep saying the grandfather, but that might've been like the uncle or something, you know? But yeah, like he was like, again, in like a seemingly normalish apartment for what you would think that building was like. Then you get to Chet's mom's apartment and she's got like a whole new page. Like the place is sparkling, like everything. This is a goldfish on the table and the glass table.
That was Anita Baker's apartment.
Yeah. the sex worker's apartment is like some kind of like day glow like bungalow or like
she did that with the put the handkerchief over my lamp and it recolors the whole room kind of situation. Right.
Yes,
it was nice. And
but then like whatever courtyard they were in, that like they just set fire to everything.
That's the hood. That's the hood, and the New York hood at that. This is like I guess this is like Midtown projects that are like in like not Harlem, because it would be different if it was Harlem. Like would specify
wherever they were. You could see Empire State in the skyline at the end.
So, but like not over the bridge, so it was in Manhattan. It wasn't over the bridge. It wasn't like we were looking from Jersey or Brooklyn. That's why I was like, where is this? This is an interesting demographic issue, just because like the hood don't act like that in New York. It's like you might be in the projects, but you're still going to see like all kinds of people there. So that's why I'm like, I don't really buy it's the hood. But then, I mean, again, the 80s in New York, that shit was like,
Cam, don't forget,
legendarily scary.
Each building had their own gang.
Yep.
There was the Asian gang. True. There was the white gang. There was the Latino gang. And then this was the black gang.
Right.
So, you know, there was diversity.
You're right. This is probably some like Union Square projects. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I think this movie is like more of like the white nightmare versus like, and he's the reluctant savior because he like ended up here. He's like, oh shit. Yeah. Well, like this is the worst circumstances put me here. Now I gotta fight my way out of the hood.
It's the worst white nightmare on top of making sure that black stereotypes are emphasized. Mm-hmm. Like, so like say for instance, when Elva is like, you know, filling out her paperwork and like, you know, signing the paperwork and getting the money out of the refrigerator, you know, she had to go behind the milk, get the money. You know, she's talking about how like, you know, she, you know, is widowed and like, and how also that like how black society would be so much better, you know, but most of these families, and she's referring to black families, most of these families don't have a man because you need a dad in the household along with the mom in the household.
Right.
And I'm just like, yeah, white man wrote that.
Yep.
Yeah. That is definitely like respectability politics.
Oh,
like
massive respectability politics. Massive. Yeah. Massive respectability politics. So I was just like, oh, here we go. You know.
I feel like that's what like I was like rubbing up against in the movie because I was trying to watch it. Okay, go with me here.
Okay.
I'm watching this movie as like a black man, right? And this movie starts off kind of like, you know, funky. He's in the office and the insurance office, and the boss even seems like a bit of a caricature of like, you know, an insurance boss. So tell him like, no, we need this today. You got to go down there now. And they're like making yucks. They're making jokes like in this scene. But then like after we meet the vampires and the plot kicks in, it seems like a low-key drama or like a low-key like just action thriller. Mm-hmm. More of a like a realistic lens, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like more of like, this ain't jokes, this is like, it's actually like this. If you go to the hood, they will fuck you up. And it's like, okay, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go to the, you know, the projects just like for no reason, but also you kind of created this situation where it feels like a horror movie but also a thriller but also a drama but also like a full-on comedy, because like, come on, this white man with the bunker and the project, get
a bunker,
go somewhere with it.
Metal walls in his apartment. Metal walls.
This shit looks like Skynet.
He's got multiple, like just like latches on his door, bars on his door.
Yeah.
He's got a little lookout slot that he could slide the nozzle of his gun through. Well, and it's also like,
where at NYCHA? Who in NYCHA is going to let you do that? Like the permits are not going to let you do that, bro.
I mean, he had that little supplement, he said, from his disabilities. So like he certainly had some money to invest in some extracurricular projects and activities. I guess he decided this was the best use of his time.
In a brownstone if you got that money. Like, nigga, right. Just go to Brooklyn and live well. Like,
he also had you know, Q from James Bond, I guess, designed his wheelchair where he has like little gadgets and weapons in there that he can just fire off at will.
But like,
that's so crazy.
The film also does the thing of like not only being immensely sensationalized, it also does the thing of where black people have to be the ones to say things like when Mr. Parker and Ray Parker Jr.'s character Will and Barry, they're all in that metal bunkhouse. Yeah. You know, bunker room and Skynet, where there's Skynet at Mr. Parker's apartment, and like, you know, Mr. Parker calls Will boy and all this other stuff, and he's like, well, why'd you help Barry for this guy for anyway? And it's, they get, you know, they get Will to say, I don't care if he's white, black, or fucking Fudge Ripple, if a man's in trouble, I'm going to help him.
And like this movie does a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be purposely or like even from subtle to really blatant, it does that the entire film. Like it does the entire film, you know.
Yeah, and like so, every character has a very pointed opinion about Black poverty.
Well, because there's only two people who live here, right? There's the downtrodden Black people who, like, if only somebody would just reach out a hand and lift them up. If only the bootstraps extended, you know, to the horizon, and they could just lift themselves up out of poverty. But alas, here they are, suffering, languishing away. And then fucking sociopaths. That's it.
Yes.
And I guess like three kids. That's
those poor children. Well, two now, because Kadeem caught it in the chest, bro. It's a wrap for Andrew.
He was so happy he got that money and was just like, oh, it was over.
My he probably had like
solved.
3 seconds of just like a Porsche moving uptown and bah, 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 bah.
Yeah, he had like 2/3 of the dream.
Yes.
Nope.
Give me a nice white woman. Ah!
Well, Sean, you made the observation before we came on that this movie reminded you of The Raid, and it did to me as well, in the sense that it is, you know, they're locked in this building, they're making their way down, you know, they're trying to hide out from enemy forces. Except this is like the racist Tubi version.
Yeah. Yes. If Tubi made The Raid, it would be enemy territory through and through. Through and through. Look, this movie, look, you can't find, like, I know you can find it on YouTube, but like this movie has never been put like on DVD or Blu-ray. It had a VHS and Laserdisc release through CBS Fox when CBS and 20th Century Fox used to do their videotape distribution system.
Limited time to be alive.
Yeah, it was a weird time, bro. I mean, like, I miss those days because like physical media actually means something in an era of shitty ass streamers. But like, it had a limited film release. It has like a VHS release, a Laserdisc release, and MGM got the rights to, and they're like, yeah, we're never putting this out.
So MGM, that's Amazon. They're never going to put this on Prime. Then again, Prime does have movies like Gingerbread Man versus Evil Bong. I keep seeing that one, and I feel like, you know.
But that tells you
enemy territory.
They think about this movie, though, when they're like, yeah, we'll stream that. Yeah. Not this, though. So,
right. Like
Gingerbread Man or niggas. Damn. Okay.
Nah. Like, cause and that's the whole thing. Like MGM, especially like from the mid '80s to like the early 2000s, like they released like a lot of like distributed a lot of movies, but also like had other studios movies and like put them out on DVD as well. Like, come on, like I ain't forgot that like Original Gangsters was an MGM video release, which is specifically out of print now. That's another one you're never going to see again.
That's crazy because I feel like I've seen that movie like at least 3 times minimum.
Yeah, I believe it is no longer in print. Like it had a DVD release. I'm not sure if it ever got a Blu-ray release, but like I just remember seeing that movie and seeing Braxton from the Jamie Foxx show as the lead villain, and I was just like, oh, this is automatically unbelievable. Okay. Let's continue. But anyway, but yeah, it's like if you had a version of enemy territory, this looks like a movie that Tubi would have made. Another thing is that like when I see Ray Parker Jr., who was at that time still popular at, you know, during that period of time in the '80s, there was a piece of me watching this film that was like, was Leon Isaac Kennedy not available? Because that's the brother that they would always get for movies like this. Was Leon Isaac Kennedy, okay? Leon Isaac Kennedy was known most for Penitentiary. I want to say Penitentiary 2, and he did a couple other like blaxploitation and like, you know, and like sensationalized type films. Like, that is Leon Isaac Kennedy's role, period.
But Ray Parker Jr. clearly channeling Billy Dee Williams, like, it seemed like that's who he wanted to be.
Yes.
In this movie.
Yes.
And I sometimes we'll give people some grace because the script, terrible.
Yeah.
Dialogue, awful. You know what I mean? Like, he's still not a great actor. The charisma is there.
Yes.
Like, he certainly has the you know, affability. But, I mean, yeah, it is hard to be cool when you're saying things like, I don't care if you're black, white, or Fred Ripple. You know what I mean? Like, you're just have to not make it. And because he also had very, me and Cam were talking about this yesterday, he has very strange lines and interactions. Like when they're in Elva's house and Barry's like, I never thought I'd be here. And he's like, where? And he starts laughing. Well, yeah. He's like, what's so funny?
And then it's like Barry's like, black humor. He's like, no, I didn't mean it like that. I didn't mean it like that. I meant like, I was just like, oh my
God. That's the weirdest. That's the weirdest exchange in the movie. I'm so sorry. That's like, they've just, in the scene, they just swung into these two little girls' room. They asked them, the little girls were wondering if they were going to rape them. Ray gets his white guy to hand him some money. But then on the way out to go out to the next set of floors, he says, I wrote it down too, because this dialogue's crazy. He says, an hour ago, I thought my luck had changed. Now, 20 stories up with $6,000 in my pocket, about to swing out into nothing with a bed sheet because some kids who call themselves vampires want to kill me. And then Ray Parker says, so what's so funny about that? And he returns, black humor. What?
Yeah.
Is it stranger than the what feels like 10-minute exchange they have after Barry kills a man and he just like breaks down sobbing, and then Ray Parker Jr. repeatedly like he's trying to coach him back,
just
like normalcy,
yeah.
But it's just like he just keeps repeating, "Tell me your name.
Tell me your name.
Tell me your name. What's your name?
It's gonna be okay. Hey. Calm down. Tell me your name. Tell me your name. Come on. Come on. I'm going. I'm taking my hand.
There's a one.
Okay. I need you to calm down. So tell me your name.
Hey. One. Hater. Hey, director Peter Manoogian. Can you give me a copy of this for my reel? By the way, just give me another copy after we're done. Want to see if I can grab that later. Thank you.
Because that scene felt like it went on for such a long time.
Yes.
But then, because he's like a very strange character, because he's not like a cool, like suave, you know, like I think what they were going for was kind of like, oh, he's like a kick-ass action hero. Like he's going to come in.
Oh, yeah.
And he's kind of like whatever the scene needs him to be in right moment.
Yeah, and that's pretty much every character in this film, is whatever the scene needs, this is what you're going to be.
Yeah, and that's how he becomes the hero, honestly, is because literally the scenes need him to get this white man to the bottom of this building,
right?
And Barry's too worried to like freaking out about this whole situation.
Until he's not. Until he's murdering Psycho.
Until he murders a person in the basement of this building. Yeah. And then, but that's how he ends up. Like, I don't know how he ends up killing the villain, because I feel like as a screenwriter, like at that point, you've written yourself into a hole. Barry can't just like all of a sudden he's like, oh yeah, I killed one black guy. I think I got another one in me. Like that would be wild strange when Ray Parker has literally like AK'd his way down half the building. Like he's okay using a firearm against his old people in the process.
Yeah, but it's also like,
it'll be crazy.
Let's before I get to the behind the scenes, let's just step back again and I think people really need to understand. On the Twitter, we're gonna put the pictures, but like the vampires are streaking that. For whatever, because like we talked about, like Tony Todd going 3,000%, everything he has.
Oh yeah,
but they look like they're off the Beat It set, like extras from Beat It.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got leather jackets and red bandanas.
Yeah,
But like it's like they've got like a synchronized organization to them, almost as if they're like a pseudo military outfit. And they do like choreographed, like syncopated movements, like every time.
Yes.
All the time. Like every, you know, like he'll like almost command them with like, and they're all just like hiss back at him. And like, I know, again, similar to Ray Parker Jr., I know they're supposed to be cool or like intimidating or like, but when you're doing this, you're like patting yourself and like all this other weird stuff. It's just like, think it has just been niggas with guns like that. It would have been fine. Like
it would have been actually. It's what I expected. That's the thing. It's what I expect. I turned this on and I was like, okay, bare minimum. White guy in the projects. Ray Parker Jr. That's where the budget went. And then literally just like the vampires doing these weird like the hisses and the synchronized steps. And I was like, okay, this ain't real. And then Tony Todd like pulls that together though.
Yeah.
It seems like from what I'm inferring from Tony Todd's speech, they are pseudo Nation of Islam adjacent, like the language that he's using and like the way that they're organized and moving seems to maybe be hinting at that in a way where there's a lot of like, he refers to Barry as a ghost, which I think all white people are ghosts, blood traitors and blood brothers. Traitor. And I think he uses a few other words that I'm just like, okay, you know, but like, you know, does he spend the weekends like on the corner on a little soapbox with a megaphone warning about like
right not wearing the ghosts a leather jacket
in our neighborhood, right. You know, like
there's no way them 5% of brothers is gonna let you wear that leather jacket around there. No way.
with the vampire's logo on the back.
Yeah,
that's the skin of the cow and the blood of your traitor. What are you wearing? What are you doing? What are you doing right here? Let me show you. Come here, brother.
Let me talk to you.
Is that Indigo
Ink? What's your name? The Count? Is that Indigo Ink, brother? There ain't no henna tattoo. I see. Ain't no henna tattoo.
Yeah.
Come on, Count. Let's talk.
Let me teach you how to count the original mathematics, black man. Yeah.
Count these 42 principles of my brother.
It's weird because like he is militant.
Yeah, I believe he is.
Yeah. The rest of them just seem like they like shooting people.
Right.
Right. They would rather play Nintendo and kill people.
Yeah. They are literally.
But then they're so serious.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to say that they're so serious that they have like vigils for their fallen brothers.
Because there's another one. After Parker like murders several of them, like they cut back to the same shot, except there's like six more people.
Six brothers dead. I'm like, what? Huh?
It makes absolutely no sense. How the Count is supposed to be a revolutionary, but he's not a revolutionary. He's just a gang lord. That's it. Like, you know, that's it. Like, his followers are essentially the bad guys in Double Dragon 1 and 2, except they all black. Like that's it.
Well, because he's got a line in Alva's apartment where she's like, you know, you're nothing but a blood sucking, you know, yada yada whatever, and he's like, you know, well, you know, it's survival of the fittest, and like only the strongest survive. The weak, you know, like they're just left to fend for themselves, and like I gotta eat, like my people gotta eat, like, you know,
my people got
if somebody's gonna rise up out of here, like it's gonna be me, and so it's that, but it's also like, but what do you do? Right. You know what I mean? Because like, do you deal drugs? Like, is this profitable
there you
for
go.
You,
yeah.
or are you
that's,
just like
that's what's missing from his character? In the build, it's like, because he like, what's your game?
Yeah, the building has, I would say a 70-year-old security guard who seems content to not work. Like, he was not working until this white man showed up. He died. So RIP security guard, because like he could have not. He was literally here to tell this white man, all the information he needed to know, and then die.
Here's your exposition dump. Prepare.
I was about to say, hey, brother, give me your ear for a second. Let me lay some exposition on you.
Right. I mean, if IMDb, if he was just listed as exposition,
I would have been fine with that. I would have been like,
yeah, it seems right.
Yeah, if it was security guard exposition, I would have been like, bruh, fine, perfectly fine. This movie does not deserve any better.
No.
Right. But you're right, though. It's like, what does this gang do besides terrorize people? You know, like, what's their income source? You know, do they have a distribution system of some kind?
If they do, they definitely got to work on it.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because the only thing I see them doing is just like going into people's apartments and breaking shit.
Yeah. It doesn't even seem like they collect like protection money or right. like people don't.
Yeah.
Seem to. I mean, they just seem to be more so annoyed that you keep breaking my door down than actually like. You know, I mean, they, I guess they try to play it up as like, oh, everybody's scared of the vampires, yada, yada. But like, people, like when they're like, let me in, they're like, no. and then they break down the door. But like, you know, if they were really that scared of them, they would have been like, yes, sir, whatever you say, you know, but they're just
right.
Like, I would rather you don't come in here. But you know, Psycho is, you know, he was a faithful lieutenant to the end. Maybe he was bringing in some income on the side. I don't know. Some money had to be coming from somewhere because that Jerry curl was large.
It was quite.
And them jackets was fired. Them jackets were fired. The jackets were actually low key. Like I was into it.
All right, Cam, official vampire recruit. Well, let's get into some of the behind the scenes because there is some interesting stuff I did not think I would find.
Okay.
Any information on this movie? Lo and behold, shout out to, I guess, schlockpit.com. Yeah. Had an interview with director Peter Manoogian.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, what a find, right? Like, I didn't think I would get words directly from this man's mouth, but here's the interview. The website, first of all, this is the website in and of itself, describes the movie as thrilling, snappily paced, and boasting a wealth of intellectually nourishing pokes at such weighty topics as greed, class, and race, and calls it a hidden gem. So that's where we're starting from.
Nah. just full of lies.
Look, lies. I got you. I got you, Sean.
Okay.
Why the fuck you lying? Why you always lying? Oh my God. Stop fucking lying.
But during the course of this interview, we do learn a few interesting things. First of all, this movie was originally called Show No Mercy, and it was supposed to be set in Cabrini Green in Chicago, because, of course, that's where all the gangs is at.
That's where Tony Todd's always at.
Yeah, and again, ironically, a couple of years later, Tony Todd was at Cabrini Green.
We gotta get that nigga out of Cabrini Green. My God.
he had a call-in. Yeah. This was maybe a little bit of foreshadowing.
Maybe.
So the film is written by Stuart Kaminsky, who is a novelist, not a screenwriter, but was seemingly brought in to do some dialogue work on Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America. And during that time, he decided to write this movie. I didn't get much more information than that, but that's what it was. Manoogian then had a friend who worked under the pseudonym Billy Lytle. So when you go to IMDb and you see Billy Lytle's name, that's not a real person. It was a real person who used a pseudonym, I guess, to get past WGA bylaws and on this movie, but like, seemingly also maybe somebody who didn't want to have their name associated with such a film.
I don't blame him. Don't blame him.
But so after that rewrite, they moved the movie to New York because they've got somebody there who makes movies on the cheap, you know, and they're like, all right, you know, if it's cheaper to set it here, we can get, you know, a lot of things done cheaper here. Like, let's do that. So Manoogian says the movie was filmed for $800,000. What do you guys think? Is that true or false?
I would have to say, looking at that, it's true.
Okay.
But even then, even back then, because like 800,000 then is like, I'm going to say 2 million now.
Hey, remember, Breaking and Breaking 2 were both made for a total of $3 million for both. And think about how many people were in that movie.
So
I think 800,000 for a movie of this quality, I think that's spot on. Because also remember, this is Charles Band we're talking about. Charles Band is a man that says we make movies on the cheap. We film these motherfuckers in 6 days for like anywhere between $50,000 to $60,000, $100,000. Like now it's a little bit different, but back then it was, we're in, we're cheap, we leave, we go, we make money. That's it.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah. So this movie,
there was also probably cocaine involved too, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yes.
This movie was also filmed in just 4 weeks. So that, I think.
Yeah. What?
Speaks to that.
Excuse me?
That's what they allege, is it was filmed in just 4 weeks. I don't know.
That's okay. That says a lot. That says that.
Yeah,
that proves that to me. That's
a Tubi production for sure.
Yeah.
So here's some quotes from Mnuchin. He says, "Here's a weird thing. It's kind of ironic since we cast Jan Michael. He came with a lot of problems due to his own drinking. But when we got to New York, Tim, who was one of the producers of the movie, wanted us to use his director of photography, and we couldn't do it because this guy was also an alcoholic. So Hope, who was the producer that got sent by Empire Pictures, looked around and found Spike Lee's cinematographer, Ernest Dickerson, and he was just wonderful. I love the style and energy he had, and he was really, really into the movie, the feel, the texture of it, everything. He was fantastic." And I have to imagine, I don't know, if you're Ernest Dickerson.
Hold on, that nigga made Juice and Bones, bro. Like,
yes.
But okay. I mean, Juice, far superior to this movie. You know what I mean?
Certainly.
I won't hear any Juice slander.
There will be no Juice slander. But Bones slander. Actually, Bones looks cool too.
Bones looks cool. Bones looks, well, and that's the thing that I will say, right? Like, he, as a director of photography, he knows what he's doing, but it's got to be like, you get called in, right? You was just hanging with Spike.
That's what I'm saying. None of that, like, just like bled off into this at all, like,
right? Well, it's also a thing of. I think the part of the reason why none of that bled off is because the way this story is built, and there's a 4 week schedule, and we just gotta hurry up and get this done. Like Ernest Dickerson was like, "Yeah, let's just, all right, next," because
that time schedule
does not allow you to put an artistic imprint and vision on a film in a story that has nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, because around this time, like, dear Ernest Dickerson, like, had worked on, like, She's Gotta Have It, School Days. So he's already got those two movies under his belt by the time he goes to film, and, you know, be a DP for it. Enemy Territory. So this is just a quick, hey, let me get this money real quick and get the fuck out of here.
Well, apparently,
and actually,
really, really, really was into the movie.
You know what? The guy that made Bones would really be into this movie. I got a feeling.
Vampires.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know what? He probably didn't see the whole script and he was like, "Yeah, then we're gonna get to the vampire." Wait, they ain't actual God damn it. He was hoping, well, because those shots of Tony Todd on, like, outside with the fire, like, being lit by the flame, like,
do
look good, you know what I mean? So I think he thought something else was cooked, and then they got to the end, and he was like, oh, he's just regular. That's a shame. Mnuchin goes on to say, he closes the interview saying, "Sadly, we didn't have the money to get the ending that I wanted. All of the residents were meant to come together to topple the gang, but I can't complain. To this day, Enemy Territory is my favorite out of all of my movies. I love it. I just wish it got the kind of release it should have got. It never found its audience, which is a shame."
It never found its audience because it wasn't any good.
And all the people who knew better said, yeah, we don't want to be associated with this. MGM was like, I guess we own this, but
yeah, I'm really like, well, we want
nothing
do
to do
doing.
With it. And so that's all we got from our boy Peter Manoogian, who I guess seemingly really enjoyed his time making this movie. It's his favorite movie he's ever done. He doesn't have a deep filmography. A lot of his are just really similarly cheap, kind of one and done B movies. But of all places, the New York Daily News, upon reviewing this movie, called it both unpleasant and racist.
Wow. Wait, the Daily News called it that?
Yes, they did.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
For yeah. That's why I had to double check. I was sort of like, the Times or no, the New York Daily News was
that's like the Post call it. That's like the
I know. Yeah.
That's like so, the Post calling it like a revelation.
Let's talk about, you know, I mean, maybe we can find a way. Is there a way to remake Enemy Territory?
For me, the only way you can remake Enemy Territory is that the vampires have to be vampires.
Yeah, that's kind of
like on site. Yeah.
Yeah, that might be it.
Yeah.
I think that's in all three of our imaginings. Is there anything else other than them being actual monsters?
Because you might be able to finesse a little bit of an Attack the Block with vampires type situation where
I see.
Okay.
You know, integrate some of these characters more. Like, I don't know if Ray Parker Jr. is just trying to get some, like maybe give him a better reason to show up.
Right.
And, you know, like, cause they've got some of the kids can be involved. And like, I think, you know, cause this is the typical thinking of these movies, as we just heard from Peter Manoogian, like, and then the residents of the building rise up to like, get the scum out of their building and retake. And you know exactly what happened. It's the same thing that happens. People think, oh, Batman took out the Joker. Like, we're back on. Like, everything's great. All those people working for the Joker, they don't just go to AT&T.
Right.
Them niggas eating on the street. They just join the next game. And they get right back to it. So you think the vampires are like, well, count's gone, man. Like, this was... Hey, everybody turn the jackets in. You know what I mean? Gotta take the jackets back.
And then there's over. Brother in the corner scratching out vampires and writing muertos on it. He's like, I'm not from Latino. I don't know what you're talking about, bro. I got a job waiting for me.
I got dual membership.
Members of the vampires join LinkedIn trying to find jobs.
So I'm pretty sure what happened is the vampires just regrouped, and the next, I mean, I guess it would have been Psycho, definitely not A-Train, but one of them, who is unnamed, claimed leadership, took the Count's jacket. Also, I mean, reimagining this movie, the Count's jacket needs to have a collar. I'm confused why he didn't have the pot, the up.
Yeah.
He should have had the collar, pot. Like, up. Yep. Yeah. That's how you know.
Yeah, because you should fully embrace it. Fully embrace.
Yeah, other than the fangs and the weird coordinated dance moves, like they have no like I'm a vampire other than that.
Yeah. So
and wearing black.
Make them actual vampires. Mm-hmm. But you know, like, yeah, I could see, I mean, because even this is another kind of 80s black movie trope is grandma has the AK and is like going in, so maybe don't do that, but like have make these characters more like people, and sure, like have them battling, because maybe that's the thing, right? Like phone company ain't been here in a minute, you know, the people they send keep disappearing mysteriously, you know, power company, TV company, you know, like there's people think, oh, because it's the gangs, right? Like the gangs are taking all these people out and nobody wants to go there anymore. And, you know, they can't go to the cops, because if they go to the cops and say, you know, our building is infested with vampires, they're going to be like, sure, nigga, right, whatever, all right. you know, so like they have to do for self, because nobody else is going to help them. So they have to get the vampires out of the building.
Right.
You really don't need a white person. I mean, I know Fleabag was in, or not Fleabag, Doctor Who was in Attack the Block.
Oh, but, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you can have a white person, I guess. I mean, there are white people who live in the hood. It's not exclusionary, so like you could have one of them, but
you also like, yeah, but... you also have to give the vampires, like, if you actually make them vampires, you have to give them other motives besides just feeding off of the people that live in the projects. You have to give them you have to give them some other form of motivation, some form of business, some form of, we stay here for the following reasons. You know, we stay here for the following reasons.
They got to like clear out the basement. They got to clear out the basement because that's their cave. That's their night cave.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been, you know, they could have been there first and they built the projects on top of what used to be, you know, their land. Cause that, I mean, that's
I was about to say, is this a land back movie? Is this land back?
It could, it might could be, you know, because vampires, they have to have their coffins where their the land of their original home is.
You're right.
So this
you're
could
right.
have been there. They could have been, you know, from way back in the day.
Ooh, could you imagine if it was like in Seneca Village and then the project they got built next to Central Park and they're like, yo, we gotta stay here because this is our land. Yep. See, this is so, that's so
Cam, that so there's still that Tubi contest. Teach me how to write a screenplay and
yes. Come on now, come on now.
Yes.
We
should just do it as a sequel on Enemy Territory too. We just like keep the vibes, keep the vibes going.
Yes.
And then we got, and then we, I mean, is the blood sprinkler scene from Blade, is that copyrighted? Like, could we do that?
You can do it if you want. Yeah,
you can do it a different way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do it a different way. Make it one of those like on the ground sprinklers that go back and forth. Yeah, you'd be fine. Yeah.
Well, you put that. You put the fanning sprinkler out in the yard at night, so A-Train can run through it back and forth.
Okay. There you go. There you go.
You know. They fill the blood and they just run it through it like kids. You know what I mean? You know, you get a little slip and slide. And
it's vampire shit, you know?
Vampire shit.
I mean, that's don't even teach me how to write a screenplay. That's just what I'm going to send it to. It's just vampire shit.
Actually,
y'all got it?
Enemy Territory 2, vampire shit.
Like, well, might have something there. All right. You know.
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you do got something. You do. And, like, technically, as of this recording, you got 22 days to get together. So, get on it.
Give me those Tubi bucks. And,
Tubi does provide.
Get something going. Well, Sean, you know what time it is. It's time to play our favorite game.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Yes.
We go around and see what Enemy Territory got on all the different aggregate review sites. Starting with IMDb, out of 10, what do you think Enemy Territory currently has?
Let's see. If I go by that Schlock Pit website, and I go by like the viewers that enjoyed it, like Schlock Pit site did, I would say a 6.1.
Okay, Cam.
Oh man, this is trash. It's gotta be like a 4. It's gotta be a four. Well, I'll say 4.2. What?
6.2.
That's like Forrest Gump is like a 6.2.
I said 6.1 and I wasn't being 100% serious.
Nah,
6.2.
Yep, this is from well, I'll read you two of these. This is from 2008. If you like The Warriors and King of New York, you'll like this movie. Just brought this on video to CJ, Michael Vincent's part, and what a fun movie this was. Urban decay is a literal nightmare. Huge ghetto apartment, graffiti everywhere, people out to kill you, gangs running rampant. This movie has it all. It captures scary New York very well. I guess you might call it softcore blaxploitation. The music is 80s, but the sheer adrenaline the movie creates still registers today. J. Michael Vincent has one of the best cameos you'll ever see in a movie. He plays Parker, a whacked-out Bubba Vietnam vet in a wheelchair, still handsome, but crazed, who tries to help a remarkably decent acting Ray Parker Jr., yes, the very same Ghostbuster singer in his first acting role, and his white companion. JMV gives an electrifying performance. One wishes he could have had more screen time, but it's well worth to see his brilliant 10 minutes. Tony Todd, yes, the Candyman himself, is also great as a vampire gang leader in this. 8 out of 10.
Did J. Michael Vincent write that review?
Here's one from 2003.
Handsome JV.
Totally agree. totally underrated. This movie, I must have watched it 40 times, but not in the last 10 years. Would love to watch it and see it because it still scares me. It invoked a lot of emotion in me as a child. Racism, hatred, violence, all wrapped up into one big burrito is what you have here. I loved this movie, and it was my first exposure to a very underrated actor, Tony Todd. Although, reaching minimal success as Candyman, I'm just going to let that sink in. And recently, as a two-bit part of a Mortician and Final Destination, he is very good on stage with the creepy image and needs to be his own villain. Way to go, Tony. 10 out of 10.
So you want to disrespect Tony Todd.
Right.
Give the movie a perfect score.
What the disrespect?
You ain't... He's never seen movies before. This person is like literally that's the first movie they saw and they were like, work for me. Stirred up some racism in my heart. I love that.
This is terrible, man. This is terrible.
Well, we go from that to Rotten Tomatoes. Okay. What do you think Enemy Territory has out of 100%?
Okay, now here I think the rating is going to be more realistic. I'm going
but remember
to say...
the New York Daily News fucking
yes. Yes.
No, New York Daily Cameron, New York Daily News said unpleasant. Racist.
Oh yeah.
So we're gonna go 33%.
Okay, Cam.
I'm gonna say 40 just for Price is Right rules.
Inconclusive because there's only one review. It's from the New York Times. It's of course under their infamous paywall, so I couldn't read it, but the
dang.
Little thing from Rotten Tomatoes says, slum of a movie directed on the cheap by Peter Medusian. So, didn't love it. Okay. I'm going to assume it's got a rotten score there. However, audience score, 73% with 50 plus ratings.
I mean, America voted Trump as president once. Like, you know, we obviously can't vote on shit. We don't know how to vote on shit, so...
And finally, going to our absolute favorite, Amazon.com. What do you think Enemy Territory has out of 5 stars?
Oh, out of 5 stars on Amazon, I'm sure that son of a bitch is 4.5.
Yeah, that's like 4.7.
0% because you can't buy it on DVD. There are no Amazon reviews. This is a movie that you could only watch.
Amazon was like, fuck no, you can't watch this movie here. Wait, it's your movie. I know.
Only here. However, though, two things. We'll go to Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. Letterboxd currently, again, Cam, you can translate this for me. 3.3.
Yes, that's like a solid good? Middle score. That yeah, that's middle above score? Average.
Okay,
yeah, that's a fair score. That's a fair score on Letterboxd.
But I will read this. From 5 years ago in the comment section of one of the many links to Enemy Territory on YouTube. Man, this film is the shit. Back in the day in the UK, I and my school friend were hooked on this film. We used to recite the vampire's words at school. Recite, written as recite, R-E-S-I-G-H-T.
I you know just spent more time in class.
I know they portrayed what could be seen as a negative image, but to us, they were big influences. We could relate because we were living on an estate with hardly anything to do, and we had our own little young crew back in the 80s that rolled in all areas with no fear and did some silly stuff. Thanks for this. It saves me getting out of my dusty VHS of it. One of the greatest gang-type movies ever made. I had great memories of a great time.
Wow. Just
no. Just
go back to school, brother. Go back to school. Misspelled the shit out of recite. Oh my god.
Now, embarrassing. Of course, we have to put this on our Carcassic ranking scale. Yes. Sean, you know at least two of the levels. Third level, we'll get to, but the first level here, shorts in the winter. I mean, you know, Kentucky, New York,
yes,
Baltimore.
It's cold. Yes.
It's cold. It's cold all around. And yet, just today, so it blows my mind every time because I don't understand, right? Woman, like, she's got a short skirt, right? So you can't even see the skirt. full goose down jacket, like the kind of ones that go past your knees.
Mm.
Legs out. It's cold. You are cold. You might as well. You're halfway to a sleeping bag. You might as well get the rest of it going. I just don't understand what this look you're going for is. But this level, this isn't hurting us. We just have questions. We want better for you. You know, Cam. What's the second level?
The second level of caucasity is this movie's touching my hair. So you know. They looking at you, very confused. See that curl, see that 4C. And they probably, you know, got a question just rolling around in their mouth. But before they even ask you that question, they're already knuckle deep in your hair. They're already, you know, feeling around. What's that do? What's that do? And then ask you, what's that do? And then you may have to smack somebody. You may have to smack a hand, you know, but it's not a real violence yet. It's not a real, like, violence unto a people. It's just, you know, an annoyance. And I guess this week, our third level caucasity.
The third level. I mean, I hope we've all seen it, but if we haven't, let me introduce you to something that, you know, it's not, the man has no shame, and so it really isn't a surprise, but, like, the means in which he goes about the grift is, it never ceases to amaze. There's a current former president who is down bad for a lot of money. $89 million here, $355 million there. And so, got to get a check, right? How would you imagine is the quickest way to come up on some money? And would you imagine it would be unveiling what he is calling, and I quote, the never surrender high tops.
Yeah.
For $399 at, of all places, SneakerCon. Former president of the United States of America at Hypebeast USA.
At least he's not the first president to have a sneaker. Thank God.
But he does have the wackest sneakers.
They're ugly. They're god awful ugly.
Them shits look like $2 Temu shoes.
They have a big T on them. I mean,
and
this
the
is
American
like,
flag.
This is like if you told grandma, I want the new Air Forces, and she went to Payless and came back with these, and you would be like, what?
No. See, like,
grandma,
that's being disrespectful. That's being disrespectful to Payless because Payless has better shoes than them Trump shoes.
Does he call them the 45s?
He calls them the Never Surrender High Tops.
You fuck, what? It was on its face, the 45s. You didn't even have to.
No.
What? Why would you waste so many words?
Have you seen that man?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, he's stupid as hell. His brain
now,
is poop.
There's only 1,000 that have been made, which, again, the man is broke.
Right.
Curious as to why he would stop there.
Well,
but
that's not even going to put a dent in him with $355 for 1,000 on the limited edition. Do the math, bro. You can't even.
It ain't $355. It's $399.
Oh, it's a $400. It's almost a $44. Yep. So you're not even breaking half a million. Like,
no.
What?
So he's
selling
$400.
$400 million, bro.
And
their whole reasoning behind doing this, on an interview on Fox News, one of Trump's people said the reason why they're doing this shoe is because black people love tennis shoes and sneakers, and that's how we're going to court the black vote, because if we create sneakers, the Negroes will buy the sneakers and then they'll vote for Trump. I'm paraphrasing, mind you, but you know, all the racism is heavily implied.
That's crazy. That's crazy. They're ugly as hell. They're just too ugly.
Yeah, man.
Cam, you're saying that's crazy, but I mean, look.
White people are crazy. Y'all hear me?
So, you know.
Proof's in the pudding.
And on top of all this, your boy got booed.
They got booed at SneakerCon? Yes. They booed them shits? Yes. Thank God.
I don't know if it was the hype beast telling him that his shoes were ugly. I don't know if it was his politics. Whatever was happening. But he made the... I mean, he came all the way down to Philly while he should probably be in court just to get booed by 19-year-olds at SneakerCon. Yep.
Oh my! They are. They look like they're spray painted. They look spray painted.
Yeah. So this is the level where you know exactly what you're doing. As Sean said, I guess the presumption is black people are gonna come up on these shoes. There, Josh Johnson did a piece on the Daily Show, and he was going around and talking to people about them. And one of the people said, "Really, the only way these shoes increase in value is if he goes to jail." And by that time, it's already too late. So,
yeah.
Yep. We can't put the shoe money on your books, bro.
Right. But he knows exactly what he's doing. This is not only just a flagrant offense to sneakers, but also just generally like, bro, you think you're going to come up on $400 ugly ass sneakers that black people are going to buy to support you to keep you running for president? Like, that's your game plan? I can't say that is one that, you know, as they said in Dodgeball, bold strategy, Cotton. See if that works out for you.
The number of products that man has shilled.
Wow.
During his presidency and after is ludicrous. Okay.
Definitely not beneath him.
I will say quality wise, this is about what you'd expect from a Trump product. So like, he's still on brand, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they went full Zion and like the second you stepped out on them, they just exploded. You take two steps,
just a back
toe right through.
One drop of water touches the force on it. It's a wrap.
Yeah, hit you with the ball, like the LeVar ball shoes, where it's like you didn't even get those.
Yeah,
you gave that man $400, and he sent you a picture of shoes. Here's me wearing them.
Here's a picture of me wearing the shoes. I'm gonna show you what they look like. Thank you for your money.
So, Sean, out of those three levels, what do you think Enemy Territory has?
This movie runs the complete gambit. It is shorts in the winter. It is touching my hair. You put your fingers in my hair, and then you're going to ask me what is in your hair. And I'm like, you do not pay for my bottle of Sulfur 8. So fuck you. I'm not giving you any more information. And it's Trump shoes. Like, it's the gambit, okay? It is the gambit. You got a movie with a group called the Vampires. These motherfuckers weren't actual vampires. Like you gave me nothing. You gave me a racist Jan Michael Vincent in a wheelchair who's probably drunk the whole damn time, so he was always in character that whole time. You wasted 1 hour and 29 minutes of my life. And it didn't matter that young Bud from The Cosby Show was in there, and young Dwayne Wayne was in there, and like Stacey Dash before she became a conservative shill. Like, this is even Stacey Dash before the movie Moving with Richard Pryor, which was supposed to be a major hit, and it did not do well because that movie's not very good. And I said that as being related to Richard Pryor, it is not a good movie. And so, wasting my time. Gary Frank never recovered from this.
Nah.
Batman never recovered from this. It was just bit spots on television and a Chuck E. Cheese direct-to-video movie. That's all that man has done ever since. Like, just terrible. Just terrible. Did I get my laughs? Yes, I did. Okay? I did. I got my laughs. I got plenty of laughs, okay? Because I had to laugh to stop from crying, okay? Listen, I'm telling all y'all, listen, to all my brothers and sisters, white people, everybody right now that's dealing with imposter syndrome and you're creative, look at this motherfucking movie for free on YouTube. And I want you to turn around and look, go to the mirror and look yourself in the mirror and say, if they can do this bullshit, I can make anything. Okay?
Look yourself in the mirror and just go,
So I apologize for the rant. It just like this movie upset me, man. Like
it's well earned.
Yeah, it's understandable.
Cam, where are you at?
Oh yeah, it's definitely Trump shoes, bro. It's Tony Todd wearing the Trump shoes. It's kind of fucked up. I mean, it is fucked up. Okay, first of all, it is just deeply fucked up. But it's also like it's not good and it's not helpful. The only way I actually see it being helpful is that we got a chance to see like a fully unhinged Tony Todd character. Right. Like that's all right. I got out of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
That is all I got out of the movie. Other than that, it's like it's like racist when it really don't gotta be. It's just like just no insight into Black people or like poverty or like why a situation like this would even exist. Why are the projects so fucked up? Maybe we could do some kind of like any type of investigation versus you can't buy a Black boy $400 no more. Like, okay,
you're asking too many questions. Too many questions for enemy territory.
Yeah, this one was some absolute trash. Miss me with it forever. Yeah. But if there was ever like a Blu-ray, I don't know.
I don't think you'll ever find it.
Coming soon.
I did. I saw a couple of
yeah, exactly. Was the Arrow Video like
4K? Yeah, I saw a couple of DVDs for sale and I was like, somebody's getting ripped off because that's not a real movie that you're ordering from these people.
Yeah. That is Leonte. Out the back of his truck.
Side note though, Sean, Crack House is on DVD.
What?
Crack House is available and I can't get this.
Oh no. Oh no. Oh no.
Look, if you need to get your copy, you know what I mean? Like, check it out. And yep, I think it's also an MGM film. So
it is. I'm looking at it right now. Damn. Like, yo.
They can only release one and they were like, I think it's gonna be Crack House.
You know, see, you know what? Now think about it. Like, let's go back. If we go back to like the 90s, especially with the DVD boom, okay? When like you get like the triple packs or like the triple feature, MGM could have put out a DVD that had Crack House, Original Gangsters, and Enemy Territory.
Ooh, and that would have been a get. That would have been a get.
It would have sold.
Yeah, it would have sold too. It probably would have been 1999. That motherfucker would have sold.
Yeah, and they were like, "Nah, we're okay." Well, I think for me, Enemy Territory. You know, I think about it, and I think about the writers of this movie, and all I can think is, "Stay off the weed." Because, boy, somebody, you were on this set of Once Upon a Time in America and thought to yourself, you know what?
This is the tale I must tell.
I think I got a movie. It's just
wild. I think I got something here.
It's wild that, like, all of these things converged, right?
Right.
This man who writes novels was doing dialogue on a Sergio Leone movie and said, you know what I want to do? Actually, this, right? Like, then the people at Empire were like, this don't sound too bad. Let's go ahead and maybe just we can shoot it in New York for cheap. Let's do that. And then somebody was like, hey, this young man, Tony Todd, seems promising. Maybe we should cast him as the Count, the lead vampire. Then somebody said, what's that nigga from Ghostbusters doing?
Where's he at? They meant to get Ernie Hudson Jr. And it was like, wait a minute, we got Ray Parker Jr. Well, he sang the song. All right, fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Just let him stay.
Stacey Dash.
Ernie Hudson, you know, Dr. Bullet.
Dame Dash was, busy doing Rockefeller things, and she was like, "All right, you know, I'm gonna start my little acting career." She hopped over, and then like, on top of all that, Ernest Dickerson, I guess, didn't have anything to do or needed a quick check. Maybe it was close to the holidays, and he was like, "Hey, Christmas money, let me get whatever's left over from this $800,000."
Right, right. You know, get somebody something nice.
And then this was made, which, wow, what if, like, it has, I can't beat that New York Daily News review.
Right.
Racist? Wait, let me go back and read this one more time. It's unpleasant and racist, and I think that's it.
Yep.
There's nothing more to say. This movie is not, it is like Shawn and Kemp said, there's some ridiculous things, and I wish you could just put together like a clip, you know, like here's the craziest parts of this movie, and just get through it. Mercifully, it is only an hour and 25 minutes, so
yes,
you know, it's not one of those that's going to take all your time if you do decide to sit down and watch it. But it's also just like, once it starts rolling, boy, they get it all in there. You know what I mean? I was, last thing I want to say though, and I was telling Cam this, I have a strong feeling my boy Psycho, fresh out of Juilliard, looking for work.
That first job said, came along.
His agent said, so here's what I got for you. It's called Enemy Territory. Your character is named Psycho. You are part of the vampire gang. Because this man, if you look at his IMDb, and I'll go look at it real quick, played nothing but a hood. Nan roles but hoods. All hoods.
wow.
I think from start to finish. And like, you know, he does his thing. Robert Lee Rush. Shout out to Robert Lee Rush. Robert, you're going to get, if I didn't give it to you already, I'm going to give it to you and to Tony Todd. You can both have it.
That's right.
It's quite literally Black Acting School. Like, quite literally the scene from Hollywood Shuffle. He is doing all of the things that Robert Townsend teaches in that class all at once. This is
all at once. Same character.
Yeah. These are the movies that Mr. Robert Lee Rush was in, and these are what he is credited as. He's in a movie called Watch Your Mouth as Bobby. He's in Dressed to Kill as Hood Number One. He's in Penitentiary 2 as Gang Member. He's in Bad Boys as Tweety. And his last role is this, Enemy Territory as Psycho, where he may have been, for real, real life, beaten to death by Gary Frank on camera.
They threw him down again. That elevator shaft, and they were like, hey, my man. Hello.
Hey, wasn't there supposed to be like a mattress down there? Oh, that's shit.
Oh, damn.
When he came back to life.
That was... Yo, I did like cheer. I was playing Resident Evil.
Yes.
You say you cheer?
Yeah. I was like, good for you, Psycho. Don't let him put you out like that. And then he got his head beat in with a bat, so...
That was crazy. They did throw him down that shaft, though. He did fly. He flew.
There was like fluid leaking out of his brain. Yes. They stepped over his body.
It's like a confirmed death. And they're like, no.
That's why I was like, same for you, Sean. I was like, are they vampires? How did he get up?
Right.
And start walking? And he wasn't like staggering. He was full strength.
Yeah, he was moving. He looked like a battle damaged Clarence Williams III and was just going to town.
And then it was over. And then it was a wrap. Well, that was Enemy Territory. Sean, we want to thank you, as always, for coming on and joining us. I mean, these are the movies we have. We apologize. I know. We wish we could give you more.
Hey, it's okay. You sent me the trailer, and I was just like, it's time to come back.
Yeah, well, you're always welcome, you know, anytime. But tell everybody what you got going on, because since the last time you've been here, lots of good stuff coming out, lots of good projects. So fill the people in on where you're at.
Oh, yeah, like for those who don't know me, I'm an author, a writer, and got a lot of books coming out this year. As a matter of fact, two came out in January. I did a graphic novel. I wrote a graphic novel about the story of Stephen Bishop. He was an enslaved Black man in Kentucky who basically discovered a majority of the caverns in Mammoth Cave in here in the state of Kentucky, to the point where he was so good at it he got so good at it that he was able to draw a map of all every single cavern he ever you know spelunked. He drew it to memory, and that map was used for like a very, very long time. But I got to do that graphic novel. It's currently available. I did a sports graphic novel for Capstone's Jake Maddox sports line. It's a baseball graphic novel called Batter Power Up. This fall, I got four more books in the Gamer. The Gamer is a superhero series. It's a superhero series for kids. They call them high-low reader books. It gets kids enticed to read with spot illustrations. Basically, I along with artist Francesca Ficarilli, we basically made our own tokusatsu superhero for American audiences. And so I get to write like Power Rangers stuff. and kids love it, you know, even though it's not Power Rangers, and they absolutely yeah. love it. So I got four more of those books coming out in August. From Penguin Random House, I wrote a book for the Who Is Who Was series, and I wrote the Who Is Shaun White. So I wrote basically, because those are like biography books, and I wrote one on a Olympic snowboarder, skateboarder, and Mr. Do-It-All Shaun White, and that comes out this fall. And last but not least, because I can announce it here, the cover isn't available yet, but through Quarto Books, and I just turned in the first draft, 59,402 words. The book is called Kaiju Unleashed, where we talk. It's an in-depth book about Godzilla movies. All the kaiju, the majority of the kaiju movies from Toho Studios and other foreign studios, like other Japanese studios, as well as international kaiju films, American monster movies, cartoons, TV shows, toys, video games. And so right now that's in the process of being edited. It's going to come out, I believe, in October. It's a busy time. But if you want to know more about what I do, you can go to my website, which I need to update again because I just announced all these books and I put them on the fucking site.
Yep.
You can go to Shaun Pryor, shawnpryor.com, and check out my books there. I have a Patreon. I haven't updated it in a bit. I'm a little bit behind. I have a bunch of podcasts that I recorded almost 2 years ago, including with these two gentlemen right here, which I haven't put out yet because the Negro has been way too busy. So I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/SeanPryor. And sometimes you can catch me on the podcast Culture Trapping, hosted by Daryl Taylor, Julian Lytle, and Gil Colon, and Martheus Wade, and myself.
Yes. Nice. Round of applause for Sean. That beautiful stuff. We love to hear it.
Thank you.
Real quick, greatest non-Godzilla kaiju.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Greatest non-Godzilla kaiju.
For me, it's a Daimajin. Daimajin is a, hopefully I'm pronouncing this correctly. It's basically a statue, but it's a statue that only basically comes to life when a village is being threatened by like a warlord. Okay. Like when things get so bad, like there's something like, you know, somebody will have to go to the statue and beg and ask. Statue might not move. Shit gets too far, that statue comes alive and wrecks shop for like the last 15 minutes of the movie, and I'm just like,
love it.
I love the idea of them running up in the statue being like, nah, maybe
later. And then like the village is being set fire to, and he's like, all right, hold on.
they made three movies. Three movies were made, and so it's like a trilogy of films. They were all, I think, like made within a span of a year, way back when. Wow. And Arrow Video actually put out the trilogy on Blu-ray, and I got it on sale a couple weeks ago for $30 because it normally goes for like $80.
Hell yeah!
So that's like that's my favorite non-Godzilla.
So wait, how big is the statue?
Oh, it's big. It's tall. Okay. It's Godzilla. It's Godzilla size.
Godzilla size? Okay.
Yes.
Maybe it just can't hear them. Maybe it's just like, you say that again.
Hey, little man. He said, speak up, little man.
You gotta speak up.
I don't know why I made a version of him as an uncle. I'm sorry about that.
I ain't put my hearing aid in. Hold on.
Yeah, I ain't put my hearing aid in. Go grab me a highlight from the fridge.
Showguns? Oh, all right, man. Let me get my slides on.
Yeah, let me put my slides. I love it.
Okay, tell everybody what you got going on, man.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and IG at the Blipster 1138. I do have a short film coming out soon that I acted in. I think I don't know where, but I saw that it was posted to social media, so that means you might see the whole thing. And when that comes out, definitely let y'all know about that. And I'm cooking a short film. I think I might be making a short film this year. So we cooking right now. We in the drafting phases right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And unlike Raising Cane's chicken, you gonna put seasonings in it.
Oh, it's gonna be flavorful. Trust. Trust and believe.
And I'm Jordan Clark. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JRSosa18, JRSosa18. I guess I got a movie to pitch to Tubi now. I got to think of a working title.
You got a co-writer. You got a co-writer right here, bro. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess look out for that. You know, we'll see how that
22
works.
22 days. They have spent less time making whole movies, okay?
Yes.
We could do this.
We're going to figure it out, you know. Besides that, comic stuff is in the works. I can't announce like Sean, but, you know, as soon as I can talk about it, I'll let y'all know about it.
Awesome.
If y'all want to reach out to us, hit us up on Twitter at @white_pod or at whitepeoplewon'tsaveyoupod@gmail.com. Love to hear from you guys. But we'll be back in 2 more weeks with more Caucasity. Peace.
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 You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.